Oh. Okay. Oh my. We know this guy. Uh-huh. Oh yeah. All right. I love it. Join us online right now is Debbie Bressler from the Crescent City Countdown Club. Debbie, thank you so much for joining us today. How's it going?
Thank you for having me. It's going really well. Everything's ready to go. So
I know you've been
filling up and it's exciting.
I know you've been crazy busy doing this sort of thing. How many years have you been doing this?
About 31 or 32 years,
holy
I think,
cow.
I'm afraid to say, and working with you guys. I mean, it's because of WWL Magic. It's given us an international reach for people to celebrate the new year in New Orleans. So, this has been all of us together.
I was just telling people last hour, you know, this is a big pull, logistics, mm-hmm. you know, expenses, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of community partners involved in this. And Debbie Bressler is the spoke, the center of the wheel. So we are so grateful for your work and thankful to be a part of this.
Well, thank you so much. It truly is a community project. And as you know, every year we start from $0 in order to put it on. And there have been times we've come pretty close to not having the sponsors. And
that's right.
We're so, so fortunate that, you know, people come back and we keep it. It's the backdrop for all the activities in New Orleans. How could you have New Year's Eve and not have fireworks?
Yeah, you're right. I've been talking about it all week here, Debbie, so I think people kind of have the main details in place. But, you know, if you're in an elevator with somebody for 30 seconds and you want to tell them about what's happening tonight, you know, what's your pitch?
Just come see the magic on the Mississippi. Go to CrescentCityCountdown.org for all the information. I think the parade is starting now. And then you've got the music with French Quarter Festivals from 9 to 12. If the fleur-de-lis drops and here comes the fireworks at midnight. Happy 2026.
I'm so glad that the fleur-de-lis drop is happening. That's one of my favorite things.
Mm-hmm.
I realize now that there's a part of my brain that I think is kind of, I'm not sure if this happened. I might have just totally made this up. So hopefully you can straighten. You've been doing this for 31 years, so you should be the authority mm-hmm. here, I would guess, not me. Did it used to be a pot of gumbo? Did there used to be a gumbo pot drop?
Yes, it was a year of Katrina, and we came back. Brian Kern, who's president of the Crescent City Countdown Club, you know, New Orleans has just had the hurricane, and the media from all over the world was here. He got a gumbo pot to drop. We used to, I think it was just a little ball or something we had before on top of Jackson condominiums. And we did the gumbo pot, and then the next year we made our own fleur-de-lis, which is what we've dropped. But the gumbo pot kind of wobbled, but we knew we had to do something because it was the first time we gave signal to the world that we're not underwater, we're here, and that New Orleans was open for business. And people were, I mean, media was just everywhere. It was amazing. But yes, that gumbo pot waddled
okay.
down.
Okay, so it was just 1 year, and it was after Katrina, which explains why my memory of it's a little bit fuzzy. Because
yes,
that's
it was a gumbo pot.
And I won't go on and on about it, because it's not what this time is set aside for. But that year, I was trying so hard, and this is my senior year of college, right? And I've just moved back to New Orleans. I had to move to Chicago for a couple months after Katrina. I come back in January. I'm living in Broadmoor. I got no running water. I got no power.
Oh,
my
gosh.
Roommate and I, you know, we're studying by candlelight. We're taking showers at the gym, at school. You know, it was a crazy
great
time.
Memories.
Yeah, I mean, it really was. It was, and you know, we're 20, 21 years old, so quite resilient. You know, we didn't really mind the cold and you know, eating ramen noodles and stuff. But we tried so hard to get down to Jackson Square for the fireworks, and we were too late. And it's like 11:59 and 30 seconds, and we're still 4 or 5 blocks away from Jackson Square. And we say, you know, we're not going to make it. So we just ducked into a bar on Charter Street. And we were just like, well, I guess let's just go to a bar. And the bar that we ducked into was called Evelyn's Place. And now it's the Backspace Bar. And there's very few people in there. But this a woman named Evelyn, for whom the bar was named, and we just kind of walked in there and were her only customers at that precise moment, because everybody was out at the gumbo pot drop. And we had a little champagne toast in there, just my roommate and myself and a friend of ours and Miss Evelyn. And that was just a precious little thing. And we continued to go see Miss Evelyn for New Year's Eve until her passing. And then the bar became something else later. But so that's what I was doing New Year's Eve 2006. So no wonder I missed the gumbo pot drop. But it wasn't actually a pot of gumbo, right?
No, it was manufactured by, you know, Blaine Curran.
Okay, it was a light up pot of gumbo.
And Brian went and said, "What can we have that we can drop?" I mean, listen, we had barricades down there that they had put down that we were wiping off. It was just locals. There were not a lot of tourists at that first one. And I mean, it was just amazing. Just like the Mardi Gras, everybody was like holding hands all the way down St. Charles Avenue, and it was quiet. But we're resilient. This is what we do. We live in a city that can, I mean, we have a heart and a soul, and we show it everywhere we can. So, you know, it's great.
Spectacular.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, you talk about the beginning and all of that. It's because of that we ended up incorporating into a nonprofit so that we could be able to not pull resources from the community that needed to be there. And we continue to do that. So Crescent City Countdown Club produces the show in partnership with New Orleans Tourism and Cultural Foundation, Allstate Sugar Bowl, the Berger and Tiller Families, French Quarter Festivals, Inc., who also do the New Orleans Eve concert at Woldenburg, and Pyromania Fireworks, the new fireworks company, and, of course, Magic, WWL. Could not do it without you and about 15 other community sponsors. We're just so grateful, and we want everybody to get out and have a wonderful evening and celebrate New Orleans style.
I'll leave it at that, Debbie. I don't know. There's no better way to put it than that. The parade is happening now. The concert starts at 9 o'clock, then the fleur-de-lis drop and the fireworks at midnight. And it's just it's a spectacular show. It's a great show of, you know, community teamwork. And we're also grateful to you and everybody else that you just mentioned in helping us pull this off. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And Happy New Year.
Same to you, and thank you. And of course, we remember our sweet friend Helen. So.
Of course. There's not a day that goes by. You know, I work in Helen's old office, so I think about Helen Centanni every day.
All the pixie dust and all the Disney stuff is gone.
I kept some of the Disney stuff. It is still in there. Yes, ma'am.
Well, I have to tell you, somebody left a rock at my front door. I love Winnie the Pooh, and I took it and put it at her gravesite a couple weeks ago.
Debbie.
I left it there. She loves Disney.
That is so sweet. That is so sweet of you to do that. Thank you, ma'am. Mm-hmm. We're so grateful.
Absolutely. Have a happy, healthy, fun new year.
Yes, ma'am. You do the same. We'll talk to you before the 4th of July.
Sounds good. Thank you.
There goes Debbie Bressler with the Crescent City Countdown Club. Thank you so much. When we come back, we'll do the news bomb. We'll get the latest out of Minnesota. And a little bit later, we'll learn what's happening with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Lots more to cover today. Would love for you to get out tonight and go check out the fireworks show. Let's go to break with Will Smith. Crank it up. Remember this one?
Is it too late to say this slaps?
No.
Get it? This slaps, Chris Rock.
90. No, it's 99. 10 years behind me. Who the hell cares? Don't stop the beat. Oh, yeah. Excuse me. Millennium. Hold up. It is. I had kind of forgotten that I picked out that stupid Will Smith song, but here's the Counting Crows. This is a little more somber. Check it out. Always happy to be on the air with you around December 30th, December 31st. We have an opportunity to play that song. We're going to play another very, really a beautiful, perfect New Year's Eve song coming up, going not into the next break, but the break after that. The song is called The Parting Glass, and it's a traditional Irish song that actually is the song that we used to sing on New Year's Eve before we started singing Auld Lang Syne. So we'll hear The Parting Glass going into the break in about 15 or 20 minutes here. So don't miss that. It's a special moment. But first, please, Coleman, light it up. We got another news bomb for you. We'll take care of some business here and then we'll get back to the fun stuff on our way into the evening. Listen, if you depend on Social Security to pay rent or pay for medicine or make groceries, you might want to start thinking of ways you're going to get creative about saving next year, because the Social Security Agency is going to start 2026 in pretty bad shape.
Internal administration documents reviewed by the Washington Post show the agency's shrinking workforce has struggled to respond to 6 million pending cases in its processing centers and 12 million transactions in its field offices. The Trump administration fired 7,000 employees earlier this year. The Post says inexperienced staff have been left to handle the aftermath, delaying basic services to millions of Social Security recipients.
That is bad news. But the more important thing to understand here is that this is not just Social Security collapsing on its own. It's the opposite. It's actually being actively, quietly pulled apart. Staffing cuts, like the man said, 7,000 jobs, office closures. There's a Social Security office in the building, three stores below me, and there was a non-zero chance that that office closed. It's still open, thank God, but all the people that are coming in and out of here all day to deal with their Social Security issues might have had to go somewhere else. Lots of other people all across the country have not had the privilege of their Social Security office remaining open. So this means longer waits. It means unanswered phones, unanswered questions, people being pushed into online systems, websites, apps that don't work very well for seniors sometimes or disabled people. Now, the checks are still going out, thank God, but everything around that is fraying, and it's not an accident. Social Security is very popular, it's very efficient, and it is paid for by us, which makes it politically dangerous to attack head on. So instead of attacking it head on, they have to just make it miserable for us to deal with. I'll give you an example. My fiance, Julia, calls this weaponized incompetence. Again, this is just an example, but if Julia asks me to load the dishwasher and I purposefully load the dishwasher like an idiot with the glasses and the mugs facing up and the plates stacked horizontally on top of one another, and instead of detergent, I put blue plate mayonnaise in the soap dispenser, maybe she won't ask me to load the dishwasher again. Weaponized incompetence. That's what's happening here. That's what Republicans have been doing to Social Security and other agencies for my entire lifetime. They let service degrade. They let frustration mount. Then they point to the mess and they say, see, the government can't handle this. We should privatize it. That is not failure. That is a deliberate management strategy. And Trump and Elon Musk and the Doggy Boys found a way to take it to the next level. And the consequences are serious. This isn't just about convenience. This is about working people's rent money. This is about seniors' medication, disability income, survivor benefits. When the customer service system breaks, it's not just an annoyance. It's a serious problem for Social Security recipients. They fall behind. They panic. They add pressure on their loved ones. They get hurt. Maybe they lose their home. Social Security did not suddenly break on its own. The point of these cuts that the Trump administration and DOGE made is to run Social Security in a way that makes it look broken. You run it badly, you make everyone there miserable, and then you pretend that their misery is evidence that it doesn't deserve to exist in the first place. And this is, historically speaking, the most reliable program in the federal government. And if they cannot even answer the phone, that is not mismanagement. That is someone standing there saying, see, I told you I couldn't load the dishwasher. One of the finest performing arts centers in the country is suddenly radioactive to performing artists, and everyone knows why.
The board of Washington, D.C.'s Kennedy Center voted less than 2 weeks ago to rename it, and workers added Trump's name the very next day. Not long after came the cancellations, a Christmas Eve jazz concert, and now a jazz New Year's Eve featuring the supergroup The Cookers. They didn't mention the renaming, but emphasized their commitment to music that bridges divisions. Separately, sax player Billy Harper says he would never even consider performing in a venue bearing a name that he says represents overt racism and deliberate destruction of African-American music and culture. Kennedy Center President Richard Grinnell tells AP the last-minute cancellations show those artists were always unwilling to perform for everyone. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Richard Grinnell should take every seat and shut the hell up. Of all the stupid things happening in American politics right now, and the field is extremely competitive, this might be the stupidest. His argument, and the argument from the White House, is that renaming the Kennedy Center after Trump somehow depoliticized it. And the artists who are walking away are just radicals, which only works if you pretend that politics entered this situation when the musicians left, not when the board, at Trump's request, slapped his name on the building. May I remind you that the Kennedy Center is literally JFK's memorial? The same way that we have the Lincoln Memorial, the Jefferson Memorial. This is the Kennedy Memorial, the Kennedy Center. So if you think that it's okay for Donald Trump to stick his name on someone else's memorial, I'm sure that you're going to take it sitting down when the city renames Jackson Square to Latoya Cantrell Andrew Jackson Square. It's the same thing. It's so unbelievably stupid. And to be clear about something else, these people that are not showing up for these gigs, these people that are canceling, that is not some radical political act. That is the most basic freedom that they have. No one is owed anyone else's labor. They didn't just shut the place down. They're not throwing eggs at the wall. They just said, nah, I don't want to do this gig. And they took their work somewhere else. That is not activism. That is a business decision for them. Healthy cultural institutions do not need threats to keep artists on stage and wanting to perform there and booking concerts. You cannot save the Kennedy Center from some nebulous threat by watching the schedule empty out and the subscriber base collapse. The gaslighting is just off the chain with these people. And all of this is just to soothe the ego of the biggest malignant narcissist to ever sit in the Oval Office. What a clown show this is, my God. Every day is a new adventure for the Department of Justice, being run by a bunch of people that you'd expect to hear spent their life savings talking to a 1-800 psychic that they saw on television at 2 a.m.
A newly unsealed order in the criminal case against Kilmar Abrego Garcia reveals that high-level Justice Department officials pushed for his indictment, calling it a top priority only after he was mistakenly deported and then ordered returned to the U.S. Abrego Garcia is seeking to have the case dismissed on the grounds that the prosecution is vindictive, a way for President Trump's administration to punish him for the embarrassment of his mistaken deportation. He's pleaded not guilty in federal court in Tennessee to charges of human smuggling. I'm Marcela Sanchez.
So, yeah, listen, this is the part where I try not to say, I told you so, but the court documents are being extremely rude about that. I told you so. This newly unsealed order shows that the Department of Justice only decided Kilmar Abrego Garcia was a top priority after they accidentally deported him and after he won that court battle. The alleged crime that they charged him with was almost 3 years old. It sat there, did nothing. No one cared. It's collecting dust. And then suddenly, boom, it's urgent. The minute the administration looks like they don't know what they're doing, spoiler alert, they don't. And again, I don't love doing this. I'm trying to say this gently because it's on the record. I wrote about this back on April 16th of this year on this station's website on WWL.com. I wrote a blog post called The Conservative Case for Bringing Kilmar Abrego Garcia back to the U.S. It is still published there. You can still go find it. And I predicted this in that blog post. I literally said that the Department of Justice's next move would be trying to justify deporting him after the fact instead of just admitting that they did that and then bringing him home. And I predicted that not because I'm clairvoyant, like I'm a precog or I got a magical crystal ball, but because I understand that this is how the president, the president's companies, the president's administration, the president's family do things. When someone shows you who they are, believe them. They have been doing this for 10 years. You don't undo your mistake. You don't admit that you screwed up. You just decide that the person you hurt must have deserved it somehow. Retroactive criminalization. Very efficient. Very American, apparently. Finally, out in Minnesota, the administration says that all this is about protecting children from fraud. But the record on who Trump wants to see punished for fraud is worth revisiting.
In an online post, the CDC's acting director, Jim O'Neill, states blatant fraud appears to be rampant in Minnesota, and the Trump administration has now frozen child care funds to the state. The move follows years of investigation that began with a $300 million scheme at the nonprofit Feeding Our Future, for which 57 defendants have been convicted. Prosecutors said the organization was at the center of the country's largest COVID-19-related fraud scam, in which defendants exploited a state-run, federally funded program intended to provide food for children. Earlier this month, the federal prosecutor alleged half or more of the roughly $18 billion in federal funds that supported 14 programs in Minnesota may have been stolen. I'm Ben Thomas.
Yeah, so we talked about this yesterday. I won't go on too long about it, but we need a quick reset here. Yeah, the fraud in Minnesota is real. There have been real fraud cases, big ones. People have already gone to prison for them. More people will go to prison, and I'm glad about that. I'm glad this is all coming to light. There's no argument from there. But what I'm not glad about is this move today where HHS, the Trump administration, says they're freezing child care money for 19,000 kids based on a viral video. And then they're just promising to figure it out later. It's too difficult for them to go after specific fraudsters, so they just shut off all the money. The same way it's too difficult to decide which January 6 rioters was just a little grandma who got lost in the Capitol building and which one went in there with a gun trying to kill Nancy Pelosi. So just pardon them all. It's just too much work. Just pardon them all. It's the same thing. So they just shut off all the funding to the entire state of Minnesota and the families be damned. They can eat the consequences. The White House says it's suddenly very serious about fraud because Tim Walz was mean to them last year. But if the fraudster, the person committing the fraud, is politically useful, hey, it's pardon season. Let's talk about some fraud cases that ended in convictions for people that Trump then offered a full pardon to. Here's a reminder of people that have already been pardoned by Trump for either being charged with or convicted of fraud. Steve Bannon, we know that guy. You may recall he was charged with defrauding people who sent money into the company called We Build the Wall. When it became apparent we were not going to build the wall, Steve Bannon and a couple of his buddies got together and said, well, give us your money and we'll make sure the wall gets built. That was fraud. That operation raised about $25 million from public donors. They did not do anything with that. Charged with fraud, Trump pardoned him before the case even went to trial. Bernard Kerik, you might remember that guy, pled guilty to tax fraud and lying to investigators while he was serving as New York City's police commissioner, crimes involving about $1 million. Trump gave him a full pardon. Charles Kushner, tax evasion, illegal campaign contributions totaling $1.2 million, full pardon. Paul Manafort, tax fraud, financial crimes involving tens of millions of dollars, including unpaid taxes owed to the United States government. Trump gave him a full pardon. There are many, many more of these. These are just the names that we would recognize. Fraud is bad. People who do fraud should go to jail. But this is not a moral crusade against fraud. This is the weaponization of government, of the system of justice. When fraud involves politically connected people and millions of dollars, they get pardoned, the crime gets erased. When fraud happens and it is a convenient excuse, it embarrasses Democrats, it embarrasses black people, then they freeze child care money for toddlers and they call that accountability. The Trump administration does not oppose fraud. They oppose unauthorized fraud. So maybe Donald Trump will pardon the woman who spearheaded the entire fraud scheme in Minnesota and is already in prison. Maybe he'll pardon her. After all, she's white. That does it for the News Bomb today. If you want to react to anything you just heard, I got plenty of time to talk to you. The way to do it is the Oakland Art Jewelers Talking Text Line, 504-260-1870. At 325, we'll talk more about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Until then, I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me. I'm Ian Hoke, sitting for Scoot on WWL. Be right back. 245 here on WWLAMFM.com and always live on the free Odyssey app. We've been talking today about Buc-ee's. If you only had like 10 seconds to run into Buc-ee's and come out with one food item and price is no object, you don't have to pay for it. I mean, look, I'm not saying you're stealing it. Like, that's not the exercise. We're not saying what would we steal from Buc-ee's. Maybe it's like, what is it, Supermarket Showdown or the show where you got to run around with a basket. This is like that. You just get to go into Buc-ee's, grab one food item and take it with you at no cost. Here's a text that says the three meat sandwich. Excellent choice. Brisket sandwich. That was the first thing I ever ate at Buc-ee's. And yeah, it's damn good. Here's a text that says the fudge sampler is my favorite thing from Buc-ee's. I still haven't had any of the fudge. April from Tikfa is listening today. And April says they dash in and out for their peanut butter fudge. Excuse me. Peanut butter fudge. James on the North Shore says he'd get a spicy turkey sandwich, even though he can't eat it. Mark, the historian, says he'd grab a pulled pork sandwich for sure. Here's a text that says they'd grab they'd grab a 22-year-old blonde cashier. That is not something you can eat, and don't grab cashiers. If you want to tell me what you would grab running in and out of a Buc-ee's, I would love to hear from you. 504-260-1870. You can call or text me anytime. To the Oakland Art Jewelers Talking Text Line we go. We'll start out in Metairie with John. John, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Hey, I just wanted to tell you I appreciate somebody not afraid to tell the truth. And I'm sure what I think you're not some bleeding heart Democrat. You're just a common sense person like me, a libertarian, about as far right as you can get. And, you know, you would think if these people, these MAGAs by now, just don't see it, there's zero hope. Even the most MAGA there is on earth, Looney Tune, even Marjorie Greene's getting it now, said he had no faith, he's not religious, and basically saying he's a pedophile. When are the rest of them going to get it? And I know he knows it, but when Stevie Sleazy Scalise, you ought to get him on the radio and tell him we want a yes or no. You know, they know better, but it just proves these politicians, they don't care about the public or they have any beliefs. They just say Scalise knocked Trump like nobody's business. All of them did. The minute he got in power, they just made a 180-degree turn. What does that tell you? That's prima facie evidence that they care about just extending their power. When are the people in this country going to wake up to that? And you're so right. These MAGAs are the ones that are getting hurt the worst. So elderly people voted for Trump, and they're the ones that are getting hurt. And you know, people just got to look at the facts. Biden inherited Trump's inflation. He had it below halfway what it was, and then as soon as Trump got big, it went right back up. The labor market's down. Oh, he's going to solve everything. And he's the biggest con phony. He don't even try to hide what he does. He's letting all the criminals out. This guy is just, I mean, he's literally the most, you said it, he's not just a malignant narcissist. He's a malignant criminal sociopath, depraved criminal is what he is.
I think,
so anyway,
yeah.
What it's worth, I wanted
sure.
to tell you that.
Thank you. Thank you, John. I appreciate it. And I think you're right to wonder, like, when when is the turning point? When does the man behind the curtain suddenly become exposed? When can we no longer keep this house of cards up? Because I don't think I'm like so much smarter than anyone else, or I've got the crystal ball, or I can tell what's happening, but I know what I know. And I know that I'm paying attention to the right trends. And I know that I'm thinking about the right things, and I know that I'm asking the right questions. And there is such a mountain of evidence that suggests this White House and this movement is headed for a reckoning. And I don't know what's going to happen when that moment arrives or when it will arrive. But it is not too late to say, I saw the writing on the wall and I acted accordingly, you know, in anticipation of what was about to happen. And I know I'm kind of sounding a little bit mysterious, and I don't mean to do that. And I don't mean to be sanctimonious either, but like, there is such a clear trend line happening here. And I think, you know, I was talking about the Kennedy Center earlier. Like, that's got nothing to do with policy. That's got nothing to do with lowering your taxes or improving your schools or making your health care insurance cheaper. It's got nothing to do with any of that. It's only about ego. It's only about the reality show. It's only about the ratings. That's all this administration cares about. Not the results, just the ratings. And there is no finer, more specific piece of evidence that I can find today than him putting his name on John F. Kennedy's memorial.
So there is something to be said about what John said. And I think it first started when, like, Elon Musk broke ties after the Doge thing.
Right. Yeah.
Then, you, like he said, you had Marjorie Taylor Greene kind of broke ties after the Epstein thing.
Mm-hmm.
If I was to take a Janice phone call from last year this time and compare it to a Janice phone call this year,
absolutely,
it's completely a diametric.
Yeah.
And then not too long ago, Noel gave a scathing rant about Donald Trump after his Rob Reiner comments after the murder.
Another great example.
Right. So here's Noel Norman, who's perceived to be this MAGA fascist, just went off on Trump not even 3 weeks ago. Janice has completely, like, hey, we need to watch out for Trump. And like you said, Marjorie Taylor Greene, which is one of the kookiest Republicans I can think of, she broke ties. So I think you are starting to see, like, the breaks and
the cracks in the dam or the boat is starting to fill up. We could come up with all sorts of different metaphors. You're right. But, you know, so there's some people texting in who are like, you got TDS. You don't know what you're talking about. You're uninformed. That's okay. Look, I don't take that sort of stuff personally. I say it all the time. I don't mind being wrong. I don't mind looking stupid, but I hate being bored and I hate being disrespected. And I try to be respectful to people, too, in that regard. And all I'm trying to say is, ask yourself, where does this end? Everything has been moving in the same sort of direction for so long now, it is inevitably going to come to a point, an inflection point, a turning point. And you got to ask yourself, what is that? Is a moment where the clouds break and the 50% of the country that didn't vote for this guy suddenly has their minds changed and they all get on board with his agenda and realize that their TDS was keeping them from seeing the light all along? Is that more likely than us having to realize this guy's like the Mad King that precipitated the events in Game of Thrones? You know, this is an epoch-changing moment where we have to have a moment of truth and reconciliation as a country. And that's going to hurt a lot of people's feelings, and that's going to make a lot of people feel small. And I'm sorry about that. And I don't relish that for them. But it is inevitable. The tide goes out, the tide comes in, the sun rises, the sun sets. This too will end. And I hope that you conduct yourselves in a way that you can be proud of later. That's what I'm trying to do. We're going to go to break with a piece of music called The Parting Glass by Henry Jameson. Well, Henry Jameson's the performer. This is an old-timey traditional Irish drinking song. And until, I don't know, sometime in the last century when Auld Lang Syne became kind of the main New Year's Eve song, this is what people used to perform on New Year's Eve. So we'll listen to The Parting Glass for just a moment. Let yourself go a little bit. I know we've been kind of puckered in the last 20 minutes or so, but just take a moment and listen to this, The Parting Glass. We'll be back after this.